Go. What's up, everybody? This is Joffer Papa Pump Penizai, a.k.a. the bad guy, a.k.a. the liver assassin with my main man, John DeMatt Maz. How you doing, Maz?
Oh, man, I'm doing excellent today. I'm so glad
to be
here.
That's the biggest lie I've ever heard, ever.
You know it.
So today we have somebody very special on the podcast.
You always say that.
You know why I say it? Because everybody's special in some kind of way.
Special Ed or?
Both. So this guy is a friend, a brother. He's been my coach. Training partners at time, my boss, and more importantly, basically a mentor, my good friend Greg Mihovich. How you doing, Greg?
Hey guys, what's going on? What's going on, Jeff? What's going on, Matt?
I missed you.
Missed all those years too.
So you know, we don't want to take too much of your time, Greg.
We want to take all of your time.
All of your time, to be honest.
That's cool. That's cool. I got some time.
This will be like a 5-hour podcast, but. You know, we just want to go right into it. So why don't you tell us about yourself? Tell us about your childhood, where you were raised, and how you kind of fell into, you know, the person you are today. What set up the foundation for the man that is currently Greg Mihovich?
Well, that's a big question. It will be a 5-hour podcast.
Exactly.
Apparently.
We only have 5 more gigs of space left, so.
All right, I'll be brief. So, you know, basically I was born in Belarus, which is one of the former satellites of Soviet Union. And growing up, I lived right in the center of the city across the street from a circus. And I think those, you know, moments going to the circus and seeing all those acrobats and physical performers, different qigong masters, you know, martial artists, et cetera, et cetera. All those very proficient guys with their bodies, you know, the magic that they did kind of like got me started in that direction. And also my granddad, who, you know, was big into physical fitness and would wake me up every morning with, you know, like his little variation of gym mobility routine and stuff like that, because he was a career military and he gets used to that type of stuff over there, I guess.
So did he have you doing more like body weight and calisthenics?
Yeah, some body weight, some basic body weight calisthenic exercises, some gym mobility exercises. He would like, you know, had some time with me in the morning like this. And I'd watch him lift kettlebells and, you know, do his thing and, you know, be inspired by it too. So I guess the combination of those two, that kind of got me started to, you know, my interest in physical fitness and martial arts in general.
Now, there's something interesting about your childhood. You, I believe you were telling me a while ago that you had a heart condition that basically, you know, the diagnosis was that you were never going to be able to really pursue athletics or anything like that. Could you elaborate more on that for us?
Yeah, sure. You know, looking back at it, I don't think it was all that serious as I thought of it as a time. You know, I was kind of like a fast grower, so I grew kind of fast. And, you know, my body grew really rapidly from like 11 to 13 years old, and I guess my heart didn't quite catch up to this growth. And you know, now looking at it, I know that it's a little bit more common, but at the time it worried me quite a bit, and my heart was hurting, and the doctors told me that I couldn't train anymore on a regular basis anyways. And so I commenced myself into, you know, alternative methods of strengthening health and stuff like this, cold water plunging, yoga, meditation, etc., etc. And I was researching a lot of you know, Vedic healing ways and stuff like this. And through, you know, combination of that knowledge and also time, you know, obviously, which heals all wounds, I actually became okay with sport activities and was able to train again. So that's pretty cool.
And wasn't it true that because of your heart condition, you were never able to be intimate with women? Then once you got...
Oh, man, that's,
that's the rumor. That's what Maz was telling me.
No way.
I don't know where Maz got his information from, you know?
It's fake. I have a question for you, Greg. You said that your grandfather had a big part in your physical fitness and he was in the military. At that time in Russia, were some of the military guys training martial arts? And if they were, like, how did you kind of find your way into your first kind of foray into martial arts?
Yeah, we had, like, you know, military fitness classes and shooting classes in school through middle school and high school and stuff like that. One more time, your question?
How did you kind of first get your start into, like, traditional martial arts?
My first martial art was Sambo at the year 11 years old, and I was practicing for about 8 months, something like this, but I was a kid.
And for those that don't know, Sambo is a form of dancing.
Yes,
Sambo is a form of dancing,
but Sambo is like a grappling art, you know, it's like a jacketed grappling art with throws and leg locks and...
What was that one t-shirt I seen? It was like...
If
Sambo is easy, it'd be called jiu-jitsu.
Something like this. I mean, I respect and I like all martial arts. I practice, you know, as many of them as I can, you know.
I'm only kidding.
I'm just saying, you know, I started out with Sambo and, you know, I was a little kid. You know, I wasn't as interested as I am interested in martial arts now. So with my friend who was the next weight, you know, I was the lowest weight guy in class. And when he quit, I quit with him, you know, us being, you know, good friends and all that. So I stopped and then I started doing karate and got actually quite fascinated by it. But then at the time I encountered a heart condition and was forced to stop doing sports. So I restarted martial arts only at about 16 with Thai boxing. And that's where, you know, seriously started falling in love with martial arts and, you know, practicing all the time. And
now, did you fall in love with karate because of Bruce Lee like the rest of us did?
Yeah, we're growing up on, like, martial arts magazines and, you know, Bruce Lee movies and other, you know, Asian movies. And we thought at the time that was the, you know, the thing, you know.
Was it hard to get some of those magazines and publications in your part of the world at that time?
No. It was crazy popular. And, you know, we watched, you know, video films with Asian martial arts in it all the time, ninja movies. We all dreamt of being ninjas as little kids, you know.
Oh, yeah, surf
climbed
ninjas.
climbed buildings at night and made our little stars. And
did you have a grappling hook?
I had a grappling hook, yeah. I had nunchucks, you know. And
he had a katana, all of that stuff.
But now, they had real ones.
Yes. Now, tell us again, you said you fell into Thai boxing at the age of 16. Tell us about that, like your coach, your gym. Tell us about, you know, your years there at that specific camp.
So, you know, as my heart was getting better, I got into basketball and powerlifting and was, you know, actually powerlifting and playing ball quite a bit. And so by age 16, I was pretty well formed physically, I guess, you know, looking, you know, from that standpoint. I was about 200 pounds and heavily into powerlifting and, you know, was doing pretty good with that. But when I found Thai boxing, I found that all those little guys were, you know, running circles around me and I couldn't even... you know, compete with them as far as speed and coordination goes. So, you know, it actually forced me to kind of reevaluate my look at and strength training and even give up, you know, being frustrated with lifting for a while. And I just started Thai boxing and started dedicating myself more and more to that sport. And, you know, eventually got a little better at it. My coach was Dmitry Pisetsky. He was a very interesting guy. He was the first Belarusian world Muay Thai champion. He was like a pioneer, basically, from Belarus, from old club Chinook. And they went to Thailand and trained there. And then he actually grew, I think, over 30 or 35 world champions at this point.
Wow.
Himself, he was a three-time professional world champion. He's like a, you know, master coach that just keeps growing champion. And I got lucky, you know, that I got into his group. You know, I wasn't any, you know, like world champion material, anything like this. But, you know, I was just physically strong. And so I could, you know, hang with those guys really well. And so...
How big was that gym? How big was Chinook for most people that don't know?
Chinook at the time was huge. I mean, it had probably over like 500 fighters,
wow.
Two big gyms, 60 heavy bags. It was an entire basement. It's a sport complex. It's a huge basement under a high school.
The entire
space underneath high school was a Chinook. You know, it was huge.
Do you think that gym being that big with that many members really helped you, like, cultivate your skills, because you probably had the availability to work with all different body
types.
Yeah,
it was crazy. You would
fighters.
Show up to a class, it would be like 60, 70 people in the class, and sometimes you would, for months, you wouldn't spar the same guy, move around with the same guy. So that was kind
of
cool.
Now, who would you say were some of the big stars of that gym that you had the privilege of training with?
Well, it was a lot of guys that were really, really good. You know, for example, you know, Red Scorpion, Alex Ignashov was from over there. A lot of... K1 fighters, one of the current fighters is Zabit Samedov, you know, multiple K1 champion and stuff like that, and world champion. There are some guys there who are like 13, 14 time world champions and stuff like this. But anyways, it's a very good, it was a very good gym. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, one of the world champions there, anything like this. And actually just moving away from there, I realized how good the training was there and how true it is that you'd rather be, you know, a small frog in a big pond or something like that, then a big frog in a small pond.
Big fish in a small pond or small
yeah,
fish in a big pond.
My drift, right?
Yes, a small wiener in a pair of underwear.
Oh, man.
Exactly.
So have you ever been to another facility that would actually mirror that, or is that the only
as
place?
As far as the size and the operation and how many, you know, actual, like, people training and fighters were there, not really. But, again, I'm sure there are, you know, some crazy good, you know, really awesome facilities out there somewhere. It's just I haven't encountered, you know, a facility that big with that many dedicated Thai boxes, specifically, especially considering the sport of Thai boxing.
You just got really lucky that that was right near where you lived when you were a kid.
Yes. And that coach was also a big inspiration of mine because he was, you know, he knew his stuff and he was coaching, you know, he was coaching. He wasn't shutting down the person's individuality when he was foot to teach. He would actually almost consider it sinful. His training philosophy was he was big on bringing the individuality, individual fighting abilities in each and every fighter and actively searching them out. He wasn't teaching them just a shablon way to train and to fight. You know, it was very very spontaneous, very unique training method.
Now, at what age did you decide, okay, I want to come to America? How was that trip over here? What age did you choose? And how did you basically start when you first moved here? What did you do to start laying down the foundations for your success?
Well, I came to the States at 19 years old as a student, and it was 1999. And, you know, I started training here continued my Muay Thai kickboxing study with Chris Ascari. And he was the guy who actually was very multidimensional as far as his martial arts went. He trained a lot in all kinds of Filipino martial arts and grappling arts and, you know, more traditional like Jeet Kune Do type of arts and stuff like that. And he was really, really well-rounded. And that was my first inspiration, like, after that Thai boxing club to really start pursuing other martial art goals and, you know, and physical fitness goals and start branching out outside of Thai boxing and you know, making myself a more rounded martial artist. Actually, how I came into martial arts from the very beginning, I was inspired by a book by Anatoly Taras. It's, it was called The Fighting Machine. It's a classic in, you know, in Eastern Europe on a classical book on fighting. He, you know, basically describes a hand-to-hand system of fighting. And one of the things he says that a competent, you know, hand-to-hand combat fighter should be able to go to various sports gyms and, you know, practice with the guys. Maybe not, you know, be the best at every single gym he visits from all different styles. But he should be able to hang at least at a decent level with
any style.
Be able to
absorb some of the knowledge, yeah.
Yeah, any style and any rules and... you know, especially if he's preparing for real, you know, hand-to-hand combat, you should be able to hang with anybody, and especially if it's, you know, by rules, with nice people, gloved up, you know, in a kimono, you know, where people actually shake each other's hands and smile to each other after practice, you know.
That's something that me and Javert talk about all the time, is how many martial arts that you actually practice regularly. I mean, for most people don't know Greg, I mean, you do judo regularly, jiu-jitsu regularly, sistema. You train firearms with some top-tier firearms instructors.
Filipino martial arts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know everything else that you do. I mean,
capoeira.
The Brazilian
dancing. I have practiced some capoeira twice.
But I think that's a true testament of kind of your style, is you spread yourself amongst everything. You're not just a jiu-jitsu guy. You're not just a sambo guy.
Yeah, I like all martial arts. In the beginning, it was all different things that I was doing, like... I would kind of like switch clothing, switch myself, and as I would transition from one practice to another. But eventually, and that was a big help, you know, Filipino martial arts and Russian martial arts, especially Russian martial arts with their principle-based approach, helped me to structureize my understanding and my knowledge and make it more like I'm doing the same thing. Those are just different rules of engagements and different things I'm trying to accomplish with it. But essentially, it's all fighting.
Oh, of course. And if you could only maybe... just train, if you only train one for the rest of your life, what would it be? What's your true passion for your martial art?
I mean, it's really hard. It's like, what if you would eat the same food for the rest of your life? What it would be, you know? Almost like a silly type of question.
Maz,
you know?
Would choose what would you choose, Maz?
If I can only train one martial art for the rest of my life,
yeah, here we go.
Oh man, I honestly, if I could move to Tokyo and live and train at the Kodokan, I would probably do that.
No, I love judo. Judo is a cool martial art. I mean, probably would be the Filipino martial arts or, you know, Russian martial arts, like a style like Izvor or, you know, Filipino martial arts like Sayok Kali or something like that. I really like those styles probably the most. They're the most rich as far as their vocabulary of various aged, non-aged weapon combat and unarmed combat and, you know, other training and fighting methods.
Basically anything violent.
something like that. I'm still loving to leave as much room for myself as possible, as you can see.
So now, Greg, throughout your martial arts career, I know you've trained at several places. Who are some of the most influential martial artists that you've met to your growth, as well as, you know, in the fitness industry, people you really took a lot from? So let's say both in martial arts and fitness, who are some gurus that you have had that really helped mold you?
Well, that's, you know, a long list, and I just hope, even if I mentioned don't mention rather somebody here, you know, just being on a podcast, you know, it's just an accident. But many different people formed it. You know, as far as martial arts go, you know, people like Mark Headmaker really shaped me up, especially early in the United States. Again, Chris Ascari, he formed a lot of my Thai boxing after Coach Dmitry Pisetsky did in Belarus. And then, you know, all the other people over the years that I trained with, John Allard, John Heliosis, my jiu-jitsu instructor I train with now, Andy Roger, Sean Brandt, my Kali teacher, you know, and obviously my system instructors. Obviously my system instructors, such as, you know, Vlad Vasiliev, Martin Wheeler, Michael Gruziev from Izvor, you know, my judo buddy Dave Perez, Jason Scully that I trained with for a while, long list of people. And as far as, you know, fitness goes, you know, early on I looked a lot, you know, read a lot of Pavel stuff, and Rostam Ait is a big, you know, hero of mine early on. You know, Christopher Sommer, Jeff Martone, Josh Hankin, you know, all those guys, Nate Morrison, Mike Miller,
John Mazurowski.
That's it.
Who's that guy? He's the world best.
Again, it's a long list. Chinese, you know, a lot of good people, a lot of knowledge out there. I'm feel really blessed that I've met so many good coaches on my path, and you know, trying to learn from all of them. You know, everybody has a lot of good stuff to offer. You know, everybody's a unique individual and brings their own stuff to the table. So that's what I'm trying to do too.
I was going to say, like, your training methods are pretty unique as far as, like, you're super into low impact and joint mobility, and you look more towards, like, longevity in your training. How did you kind of move into that style of training? Is kind of, you kind of went against the grain in your time of, like, when you came to America, where everybody's doing, like, bicep curls and bench pressing and running, like, you know, miles and miles, and your training now is the complete opposite.
Well, you know, early on, by you know, training with my granddad, watching those circus performers, and just overly, you know, especially after, you know, during my teenage years when I transitioned from powerlifting to Thai boxing, I had to reassess conditioning methods and took a really deep and long look at them, and you know, did a lot of research in that direction, studied bodyweight training, gym mobility, and Olympic weightlifting, other kettlebell training, other strength training methods. You know, certain truth, universal truth started emerging for me, you know, and that's not like it was a chosen one, you know, they were evident for anybody who would look, you know, closely, but that compound, you know, functional movements, they elicit much better training response than wasting my time with preacher curling and stuff like that. So, you know, I always appreciated athleticism, and I tried to become better athlete, and in my search to become better athlete and people that I train to make them better athletes, I kept, you know, refining those type of training methods, and what it, you know, those discoveries led me to the understanding that good training is long term, that you need to address, you know, your body in multiplane, you know, fashion, and you know, train the joints. That's the foundation. Train the movement, and you know, and good things come from there.
Now, do you feel that the training regimen and the training style that you've procured over the last 30 years has become probably the best for longevity for yourself and your clients?
I mean, it's ongoing, but so far...
I mean, it's always a learning process.
But right. No doubt about it. But so far, you know, the results show that, you know, I've already trained, been professional coach for over a decade at this point, over 12 years. And, you know, coach hundreds of people. And it showed, and, you know, researched a lot of other people methods whose experience, you know, goes way above mine and beyond mine. And, you know, it shows that, yes, combination of gym mobility, sensible strength training, functional strength training, good nutrition, you know, good rest, you know, it still works. Mass, it still works. There's still hope.
Now, thank God.
Now, what most people don't know about you is that, you know, you used to actually be a competitor in combat sports as well. So maybe we can delve into that a little bit. Why don't you tell us about your combat sports career and what an average day used to look like when you were prepping for a competition, say, whether it be a Muay Thai fighter or jiu-jitsu competition?
For a while I was competing for a little bit in various combat sports. Actually competed in nine or 10 different combat sports. Jiu-jitsu, you know, sambo, judo, submission grappling, Muay Thai, kickboxing, boxing, signed and competed in shooting as well. I think I mentioned most of them. So for a while it was again a thing for me. I kind of got caught up in a couple of those styles, competing in them. But for a while it was a thing for me again. I wanted to test myself in all those areas, just to again fulfill that ideal of ultimately a hand to hand practitioner, hand to hand warrior that could hang with any guys by the rules, in any given art and do okay. I didn't compete at the super high level, or anything like that. But
you could walk into a gym and exactly. not practice that art and hang with the guys.
Yeah, I won some tournaments and did some good fights. Overall, I had probably about 15 full contact fights and about 70 matches in grappling arts. And so that experience, I'm grateful that experience that I came out without injuries. Was able to get valuable experience and experience so many different combat sports modalities, and it was a cool journey.
Any plans to compete maybe in some lower impact combat sports like some grappling or maybe some judo?
Perhaps you never say anything.
Sometimes you get the bug to compete.
Yeah. Right now I'm really I train all the time. I still spar with everybody in all the martial arts style that I study. My focus right now is self defense training. In all those different formats. Do I get a bug to compete against sometimes? Of course. Yeah, sometimes it happens.
Especially with this guy around, right?
Right. With Jeff around, for sure.
He wants to compete on anything.
Yeah,
but I have so many projects and responsibilities on my hands right now as a coach, as a coach of coaches too, because I don't just coach people, I coach quite a bit of coaches actually, and touch a lot of lives that way.
What's it like?
Produce my own videos. There's a lot of things that I have on my hands. So
when he says produce videos, he made one very famous called One Night with Greg. Make sure to download that.
Well, when you're coaching coaches, you're always having to come up with new training and keep things fresh and coach all their personalities and their egos too, right? Because how many coaches do you have here at your gym?
Yeah. I mean, it's like training everybody. You have to,
meetings and bills and rent and clients. It's a huge project.
Yeah, it's a project, but I've been doing this for a while now. It's not all that terrible as you make it sound.
I'm not making it sound terrible.
A lot of that stuff is
it's very fulfilling.
Yeah, and I do what I like. I teach people to live healthy, happier lives, make them stronger. They learn some martial arts, learn to move well, enjoy themselves, and it's gratifying. So I enjoy my line of work. Working with coaches, I'm able to, impact more lives, touch more lives on a broader scale. And there are already coaches that coach coaches. So it's ongoing,
It's a vicious cycle. What a good cycle.
Jeff is one of them.
Yes, I am. Now, Greg, how did you come up with the name The Underground Gym? I'm sure people are wondering about that.
It actually came to me in my dream. One day I was just, sleeping and I woke up and... that name popped up in my dream. I don't remember the exact circumstances behind it, but I woke up and the name of the gym came to me. And what the idea for me, that underground gym represents in a position to, the conventional type of fitness, to your,
non-mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. Non-mainstream. They call it unconventional nowadays. Like the MyMed Methods magazine that I wrote for quite a bit, they call this unconventional training. Nowadays that's a term. But at the time, underground gym for me was representative of that idea, that it's the opposition to your curl type of fitness, where you look into the mirror and
flex,
keep flexing. Yes, nonstop.
It's my only kind of workouts.
We focus on movements and flexibility and mobility and coordination, all that good stuff. So
I remember going to your gym almost 10 years ago, the one you had, the smaller gym in Neptune.
Six yeah. years.
7 years, whatever it was.
Yesterday.
You were like one of the first gyms I went to that had a full array of kettlebells, all the sledgehammers, tires, like the club bells. Mm-hmm. And now that's almost becoming the standard, and you had that 8 years ago.
Actually, way before you stopped by, too.
Yeah, well, way before I was there, but as far back as I can remember.
I think we started Underground Gym in 2004, 2003, or something like this.
So that's amazing. You're like ahead of your time.
We were at the time, I think just me and Uncle Mike from Training Room in Avon. We had, I think we were the only kettlebell gyms in New Jersey. maybe yes, maybe not. I'm not sure, but I think so.
Now, you know, later on when you were in that area of Neptune, a lot of other gyms started opening as competition. What basically set you apart from those other quote-unquote functional gyms? Because I know, Jim and Mike had theirs. Greg Killian had his gym. What do you think was the factor that separated you from, they're very qualified, very knowledgeable coaches. I'm not saying anything like that. What separated you from the other competition?
Probably looks, in my opinion.
Yes, I got to agree.
Well, that was, the primary reason behind, all the huge success over the years that I've experienced. Just kidding. Truthfully, I never looked at any of them or any of the gyms opening the areas competition ever, especially, functional gyms like of those, gentlemen mentioned. And I was actually friends and still friends with all of them. I trained at training room a few times. Uncle Mike was actually giving me rides to Chris Ascari's classes my first year in the States, but I didn't have a car. And he helped me out with that. So we were good friends from the very beginning. And he showed me a few things too early on, and I'm grateful for that. And, we trained with Greg Killian. I helped him to prepare for a couple of his MMA fights with my Muay Thai stand-up and stuff like this. So I never view anybody like that as a competition. You know, to me, they were all, brothers in crime, so to speak. They were spreading the message, the fitness message, to the people. And the more people know about it, I feel like there's enough in the world for all of us,
They almost seem like they fill different kind of niches.
Exactly.
Too.
That's why I don't hesitate coaching coaches. I love giving out knowledge and multiplying it. And, there's just more to come back. And the more good coaches are out there, doing good things with people, the better this place will be and the better I will be ultimately, too. So
you're like a special operative. You're a force multiplier.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
but in a good way.
Yes, yes. So I'm saying it's all a good thing. As far as the differences, again, that, blend of, custom blend of mobility, strength training, and martial arts, in that own unique way was what separated or made us different from, other folks who were teaching in the area.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of, huge Globo gyms in our area, and, Mike and Jim at the training room, and then yourself. Mm-hmm. You guys were some of the first ones to really kind of break away from that whole big box gym thing.
Yeah. Well, that functional approach is, first of all, again, that mobility, kettlebell bodyweight training and blend of martial arts that we had was one thing. And second, I think from the very beginning, we're very keen on detail, We don't just let things for granted or let them run, unattended as far as, there just has to be technique. It has to be good, good technique, good execution, So
and you're a smaller...
attention to technique is what, I think defines underground gym,
Well, you're a smaller facility, so you can cater and you can see and you get to touch and look and see everybody in your gym. It's not just
a
number.
Oh, yeah, I get to touch a lot, yeah.
Oh, well, if that's what you're into, but...
Yeah.
I am.
You know what I mean? You're not just like a person swiping your key going through and nobody knows if you're there or not. You're the coach. You're there. You see everybody. You talk to everybody.
No, absolutely. That's the enjoyable part of the job,
And I'll say it's a real testament to Greg because I actually started off as a client. And, just like Maz was saying, he's actually very personal. He makes it so he's there. He's 100% committed to your success. I mean, I am where I am with my martial arts career because of the foundation I got from Greg. And I don't ever hold that back. I make sure I tell as many people about that because now especially it's very unique now that it all came around full circle and now I'm working with him. I'm a part of the gym and, if you want to be more than just a number, you train here and that's sincerely something I believe in.
Roger that.
So I got a multiple part question.
Oh, no.
All stems from the same thing. All right, your goals in the next, let's say, year and 5 years for your business, your personal life, and your martial arts, and let's not even say martial arts, say your just skill-based training.
We don't have enough memory for that.
All right, very abbreviated.
Well, I don't know. Let's just talk about my training goals, if you don't mind. I'll keep, maybe not everybody's interested in hearing my personal goals and stuff like that, but...
He's going to have 7 babies.
So anyways, I'm just trying to, right now, I was always fascinated with bodyweight training. I'm kind of having like a, you know, a re-inspired rerun on it, if you wish. So for the last year or so, I've been dedicating myself to bodyweight training and doing a lot of gymnastic-based strength training. So that's what I'm currently enjoying at the time. I've been doing kettlebells for so many years that I still do a few kettlebell exercises, but, like get-ups and swings and stuff like this, and I enjoy them. But, you know, other things, I'm trying to broaden my horizons and come out of the patterns and make myself, you know, more well-rounded and still keep learning. So that's the kicker I'm enjoying right now is the bodyweight training. I'm trying to get better at it, get better at handstands and other advanced bodyweight movements. And then as far as martial arts, I'm looking forward to continuing my, you know, martial arts study, my judo, jiu-jitsu, Filipino martial arts, Russian martial arts, keep refining my Muay Thai. So that's what I'm excited about. And every day is a new blessing, you know.
How about as I'm looking over here, I see a picture of you and one of your friends who's a tactical firearms instructor. Do you have more plans to kind of further your education in firearms and kind of all that spec ops style training as well?
Yeah, I got into it by knowing a few guys who I grew up with and trained Muay Thai with over here in the States. Good buddies of mine, you know, true heroes, U.S. Navy SEALs, real hardcore guys, very, very capable. And so I've been taking a lot of classes, you know, from a few of them in, you know, tactical training and firearms and stuff like this. And, you know, first of all, those guys, you know, have really legit skills. They're good coaches. And I'm enjoying that part of martial arts as well. To me, you know, again, a competent martial artist is more than just, you know, fighting one-on-one in a sports environment. You know, he has to be able to have, you know, good communication skills, good tactical skills, you know, just being all-around, you know, practitioner, all-around tactician, you know, good driving, you know, calm, keeping yourself, you know, a lot of mental, actually, skills and, you know, communicational skills and stuff like that. And, you know, being aware, you know, is a big part of martial arts, because if you're the best of the best, but you're oblivious, you know, so that carries on to, you know, a lot of things that happen in your everyday life, just being aware all
just
the
being
time.
Present, yeah.
Being present, being aware, you know, it's huge. And that's why I enjoy martial arts so much. It's not because I'm a violent person or seek violence or, you know, you guys know me for years. You know, I never known was known for, you know, for jumping people. But
he's killed 10 people. I've witnessed it.
No, but, I know you mean. You're a martial artist. You're seeking knowledge. It's not about being the baddest dude in the streets. It's
exactly.
About just learning and absorbing and obtaining.
Yeah, exactly. It's my way of it's my tool for bettering myself and to standing up every day and having something to look forward to that you know, is improving me as a person, physically, you know, spiritually and mentally. And it's my tool that I chose that you know, I enjoy doing. I enjoy transferring to others. You know, fitness, martial arts, and you know, waking up every day and accomplishing new goals. And I hope you know, I can do it for a long time. I have a few students who are big inspirations of mine, you know, who are, you know, over the age of 70 and still very active Thai boxers and kettlebell athletes and quite capable of that, actually, and can whoop some butt of some young bucks, you know, far in between.
How old is your oldest client?
70 years old, and he's actually one of my Thai boxing partners, training partners.
And he's still badass?
Oh, he's very badass, man.
That's crazy.
He's like a mule, has this amazing conditioning, and just a good training partner, you know? He's a great guy.
Yeah, he was my training partner for about like 6 of my fights. That guy, we would do pad work together.
Yeah.
And that guy, I mean, I'd be gassed. I'd look over, and he'd be smiling over at me, and I'd be like, what do I have to do? This guy is not getting tired.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I have another guy who's also, you know, 70, and he's a former police captain of a local town. And the guy's in amazing shape as well. And so guys like that are inspiration for me. That's why I invest so much into, you know, recovery and mobility training methods too, because my term is to train long term, you know. I'm in it for the long haul. I want to be training, you know, my martial arts and my fitness 20 years from now, 40 years
like
from now.
Like the Helio Gracie, but of multiple martial arts.
Yeah,
like train till
whatever comes my way that I have an opportunity. Obviously, I train so many different things that I cannot possibly train them all at one time. You know, so I have, you know, focuses, you know, for a few months I focus on, you know, a handful, then I move on to the next area. But again, for me, it's all just movement at this point. I'm just trying to refine it.
Is there a martial art that you would love to train but haven't had the opportunity or have met a person that you thought would be worth obtaining some information from? Or,
Yeah, there's a few groups that I'm, you know, interested in, a few groups that I would like to meet in the future and to get training from. And what I found, you know, from you know, training all over the world with all kinds of great guys is a lot of times it's not even the martial art. The martial art could be the same, or it could be the same banner of martial arts. But it's the individual behind it and how he applies those techniques and those principles, whether to fitness or to martial arts or to other areas of his life, that it's almost like each and every fighter, person, coach that you meet out there has his own, you know, martial art or fitness or regimen or something that you can, you know, reach inside and benefit from, you know.
It's like,
no matter what the umbrella is.
Maybe you trained jiu-jitsu, but you never had a chance to train with Marcelo Garcia or somebody like that because you
exactly.
appreciate his style.
And then, you know, the jiu-jitsu might be completely different from any jiu-jitsu that I've touched upon before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. That's an interesting take on it.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to start wrapping up, but before we get to the last two questions, where do you see the underground gym and yourself moving towards the direction? Where do you ultimately see, you know, the entity you've created? Where do you see it growing?
Well, you know, what I'm seeing is, you know, I'm seeing underground gym growing, obviously, you know, in size and potentially, you know, as the team of coaches with us grows as well, we're going to have other locations. I never would like to, you know, turn into a big franchise type of gym where, you know, things are watered down, and I would never allow that. You know, I'm still seeing us, you know, growing, but within the size where we can maintain, you know, personal touch and, you know, attention to detail that we have right now.
You're going to be able to oversee and be able to program and be able to...
Not take every role, you know, in the organization, obviously, so it's beyond anybody's, you know, possibilities. But what I'm saying is, you know, there's a high emphasis on quality of coaching here, and, you know, I would like to maintain it that way.
I think that's the right thing to do. That's like an ethical thing to do, too.
Yeah,
this is the way people are getting what they pay for.
Yep.
Well, I have a question that we kind of haven't touched on yet is you were kind of like one of the first people I knew who had a very interesting diet. And I know your diet has kind of changed and you've kind of adapted over the last few years. Can you kind of talk about your evolution of your diet since I've known you? Because I know you went from like vegan, raw vegan.
It's actually started way before.
Well, way before, but you know.
Right. Growing up, we kind of, you know, Belarus actually has really, really good food. A lot of organic food and a lot of, you know, clean food. So growing up, I kind of ate, you know, wholesome foods in my family and grew up on some good nutrition, good solid old-fashioned nutrition. And then when I encountered a hot condition, I got more interested in, you know, Eastern training and nutritional methods and stuff like that. And so I became vegetarian actually early on, about 13 or 12 until about 15 or something like this. And experimented with that lifestyle and, you know, made some mistakes along the way, figured some stuff out, moved on. And then later in my 20s, I came back to it. And, yeah, I was a raw vegan for about 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, I eat, you know, fish and eggs and meat and actually hunt and stuff like that nowadays. And it was, you know, like with everything, you know.
Trial and error kind of
trial and error, you know, you learn things. And what I came to conclusion, it's just like a fighting style, you know. It's first of all, it's changing and it has to be adaptable to the circumstances. And second, it's, you know, there is no one type of nutrition that can be covered for everybody. You need to find what works for you.
I agree.
Works 100%. For a specific lifestyle, you know. So, you know, it's ongoing.
Now, before we start ending it, we got to ask you, any shout outs or people you want to mention? You know, just you want to give a hello to and any sponsors, things like that.
Well, you know, just want to say thanks to, you know, to all my students, all my coaches over the years, and, you know, all my friends who are listening right now. You know, I love you guys and thank you for everything. And as far as any specific shout outs, you know, check out undergroundgym.com for more information about the gym, our training methods, and our products. And, you know, I'll see you all guys soon.
Now we have one last segment. This is kind of been like our new specialty. I don't know if you're ready for this.
Always ready.
It's the random question segment. And me and Joff are going to ask you a random question.
Maz is going to go first.
I'm going to go first? Oh, my God. see, that's the bad part about it. Bad part about that is sometimes I get a little bit of a brain fart and I can't think of anything really interesting off the top of my head. But
smells like one.
That's my brain starting to work sometimes.
I see.
Okay. If you were back home in former or now current Belarus and you were going to go out and have a party with your friends and there was five five guys, how many bottles of vodka would you need if you were drinking?
Well, first of all, I didn't drink. And
if you were drinking.
Second, you know, home for me is here now. You know, I do visit Belarus because my mom lives there. You know, I go there for those purposes and also to train. But, you know, when I go there now, I become homesick. You know, I miss here, you know. I come back here home. It's been my home for a long time already, for almost 15 years. And, you know, this is where my home base is. So, and I'm enjoying it, you know.
I don't blame you.
Now, if you were stranded on a desert island and you could have five women with you, what five women would they be? Who would they be?
That's going to get him in trouble.
Okay, three women.
All right, I submitted the names of the women, you know, in a separate survey. You guys ask me.
We'll read them off later. All right, if you were stranded on a deserted island and you could only bring one person to help you survive, who would it be?
Only one person.
Only one person.
That's not my question, by the way.
Well, it would be, you know, the guy who knows the most about the survival, you know. Some sort of, you know, maybe my survival instructor, Toby Covern. You know, I'll bring him.
And who's he?
He's a former UK Marine from England. Cool dude. He teaches you know, wilderness survival, and I go to his courses pretty frequently. Actually, right about to go in a couple of weeks to his course in Massachusetts.
Oh, very cool. And what does he do? Like a few day outdoor survival course.
Yeah,
like land navigation.
We live in the wilderness, and you know, set up our own shelters and stuff. It depends on the assignment. If you know, when I was just starting out, it was fairly basic, but now he takes all our gear away. Except for like one or two items. And
no iPhones.
You know, and it's a little bit rougher, but I enjoy it. It's good training, and it's good time with nature. And when you come back, you
take you out of your regular environment.
Yeah, it's nice.
That's awesome.
So, guys, that's our podcast with Mr. Greg Mihovich. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Greg.
My pleasure.
And keep following us, guys. Maz, anything to close out with?
Nope. Just you can check us out on all our social media. We got Facebook.com/BadGuyMuayThai. We have Twitter, official BGMT, Instagram, same name. We'll have all our links included in the podcast as well for Greg Underground Gym. And you could join his mailing list, which I'm a fan of because you get awesome emails. He has a great YouTube channel. And he's always posting interesting and pertinent content. So we'll have that up, and we hope you guys check out all the links and information.
Stay classy, everybody.
That's it.
That's it.